Welcome to Dollars and Cents, creating your fulfilled life with Nicole Romito from Private Vista. In this podcast, we draw from years of experience as well as guest specialists to help you create the life you imagine. Join us in this journey as we enlighten and empower you to align your lifestyle to help you achieve your goals with a clear picture of your future. Now, let's get to the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Dollars and Cents podcast with your host, Nicole Romito. Nicole, I've missed you. I don't know where you've been, but it's good to be with you again. How are you?
I was thinking that too, Bill. It has been a hot minute since we've had the luxury of getting together to record another fabulous episode. I'm doing great. How about you?
Good. I was over winter. We had nice 50-degree streak here in New Jersey. It was beautiful. And then we got 8 inches of snow. So I've returned to reality. We're back in the middle of winter now.
I hope you enjoyed the brief respite from
the traditional weather. Great. It was just way too short. It was way too short, Nicole. I need spring.
From your lips to Mother Nature's ears.
Thank you. Please. What do we have going on today?
This is an exciting, I would say, finale to our three-part series where we've been focused on helping those listeners who are getting ready or at the very early stages of selling their business. So as a refresh, and in case our listeners, I don't know why they wouldn't be, but aren't up to speed on all our released episodes, we are going to talk today about the banking and finance side of when you're selling your business.
Yeah. The money. The episode is the money.
The money. I like it. We had George Kay on, who he talked about how to get your heart and head ready when you're selling your business. And then we had Dee and Eric join us to talk all things taxes and legal. And so we thought, okay, we've got our head in the right place. We've got our books ready. We've talked to our lawyers with all our NDAs and such. So let's talk about how we might want to be financing when we're selling. And to that end, I have two more esteemed colleagues that I know through the EFBC, that is the Entrepreneur and Family Business Council. All of us are strategic partners, and we work with them to educate and empower the people of family and entrepreneurial businesses through impactful programs and a unique community of peer support. And in studio with me today, two fabulous friends and wonderful bankers. The first person I'll introduce is Matthew Hammer. And he is a group senior vice president and division manager in Wintrust's Commercial Bank, managing the Chicago-based middle market privately held business area. He has 21 years of commercial banking experience, including helping lead Wintrust growth since 2013. He has a diverse experience with manufacturing, distribution, and service companies. And also joining me in studio from Wintrust is Dawn Mays. Dawn is a senior vice president in their commercial bank division. She serves as a relationship manager and identifies and develops new client relationships while providing comprehensive solutions to her existing clients. She has over 25 years of commercial banking experience in cash flow and collateralized lending, primarily working with privately held companies covering a broad spectrum of industries. So, wow, I feel like the baby in the room, but welcome, Matt and Dawn. So appreciate you being here with me today.
Nicole, thanks for having us. We're excited to be here and part of your podcast series. It's an exciting topic.
It definitely is. And I have to say, I think my listeners may know, but I think it is going to be very exciting because I too grew up in banking. And I mean, you don't get much more fun than three bankers in the room together, right?
Exactly.
As I talked about with our listeners, what we're really going to talk about today is we're going to be geared towards those listeners who are ready to sell their business. We probably will do an episode or two on maybe if you're 5-7 years out, what could you do to prepare? But today I know you and Dawn are going to direct your comments and share your wisdom in working with your clients, you know, sharing the experiences you've had in having them successfully navigate selling their business. One thing I want to kind of set the tone, and I really liked this that you guys shared as we were doing our preparation for this episode, is you guys said, we shine during someone's most difficult day. And I really like that and just wanted to kind of tee up our conversation with that. And for our listeners, you know, difficult doesn't mean bad. I think where Dawn and Matt are coming from is, you know, it's a difficult decision to decide to sell your business, especially when we're talking about a family-owned or a closely held business, because let's be honest, it really is like one of your children. So I think with that, why don't we start off with you're thinking about selling or you're ready to. How does that look, Dawn? Is it always walking away 100%?
Such a great question. And I'm going to piggyback off of your exciting. This is exciting. Sometimes it's difficult, but for the owner that is looking at future opportunities, this is their legacy. This is their life's work. This is a culmination, and this should be viewed as an exciting opportunity of the next steps. So really, I think a great place to start for an owner is self-reflection, to really to think about and visualize what they want to accomplish. Whatever they can dream, they can accomplish. They can approach it with 100%. If I had to profile that owner who wants 100% sale, it's someone who's ready to exit. It's someone who's made the decision that the return on an investment is as high as it's going to get, and they want to take it off the table and they want to look at new endeavors. They want to give opportunities for their family. Those are good reasons. Another owner can look at it from a partial. They see future opportunity. They see growth opportunity. They want to keep themselves in the game. They want to see if there's more return on their investment, but they decide they don't want all their capital at risk. So they're going to structure a partial sale and they're going to stay in somewhat, but they're going to say they're going to take some chips off the table so that they can monetize their equity, their capital, and do something for their family. So I think that once you're able to decide whether you're fully exiting, whether you see potential, and I think it also is asking yourself, do you have it in you? Do you have that dedication? Do you have that commitment? Do you want to keep going, or do you want to do something different with your life? If the answer is you have that commitment, the partial becomes very attractive. If you want to move on and try something different, the 100% sale is the right way to go. From there, it's envisioning what your audience is who wants to potentially think about acquiring your business. And I would break that down into three specific groups. It's going to be a strategic investor, it's going to be a financial investor, or it's going to be a private sale. And from that standpoint, again, it really comes down to the owner's motivation. If the desire is to leave it behind and start something new with his or her life, then a strategic is perfect. They're going to take that opportunity, roll it into what they're already doing, give some type of limited contract to the owner, and that owner can go on with his or her life. From the standpoint of a financial, that's going to be the highest return on the investment, most likely. That's probably going to be the highest offer. So for the owner that is really looking to get as much as they can out of a potential sale, financial partner becomes very attractive. But typically, those still require some type of rollover capital investment from the owner for the future endeavor. Again, from an owner's perspective, does he or she want to continue on with that risk profile? I would say the third profile is the private sale. That owner that is so committed to their success and the legacy that they've built that they can't envision leaving it behind. They have employees that they're responsible for. They want to ensure that it stays somewhat intact to their vision. That is when an owner will contemplate either selling to his or her employees or giving some patience for a sale to go to a management team, someone that is going to carry on his or her vision and structure of how they built the company. So as you can see, that's why I describe it as exciting.
Great. Well, Dawn, that is a great kind of high level overview of the few different ways that you can exit your company. Maybe I know, as I mentioned in your bio, you've been doing this for a couple of years now. Do you want to either maybe do pros and cons or highlight when one option may be better than not, and also where you've seen maybe things not work out so well, and what are some ways to avoid that?
Again, a great question. Typically, when trouble arises, when difficulty arises with the sale, it's when the owner is not expecting the outcome and what their vision. Again, I still go back to, it is the owner's legacy. It's the dream of the owner. It's what the owner wants. And if the owner hasn't fully contemplated what that exit is, there may be disappointment. So for a strategic, there's no expectation that owner is going to stay in that business. They have a different business model. They have a different growth initiative. They're going to give some capacity for the owner to transition and stay in for a year or two. But the goal is to exit the owner out and for the business to morph into some other concept, some other growth strategy. From a financial partner, the drive is the return on investment. They're not looking at a business model. They're not looking about at an employee base. They're not looking at the historical perspective of what the owner built. They're looking for return on investment. They're not going to be as sensitive to running the same business model or taking care of employees that have been there for many decades. It is simply a risk return model. The owner has the opportunity to roll over the investment and stay in with the new initiative, but should not have any idea that what they've built to that point is going to continue on. The final one that we talked about, which is the employee stock ownership plan or the ESOP, where employees or managers, key management becomes the exit strategy, is for that owner that really is committed to the employee base and the business that's been built and wants to keep it on that trajectory and has faith that the team that they put in place are the team that's going to continue to do what's been done historically. So I think that's how I would describe each of those sale opportunities. And the question of whether there's negative or whether there's a con is if the owner has contemplated what their vision is and how and what their primary motivation. Do they want the highest price? Do they want the ability to walk away and be done with it forever? Or do they want to see that dream carried on?
That's a great way to summarize it. And these owners have spent typically a lifetime or a good part of their working life building this up. There are a variety of drivers of what's most important to them as they're exiting the business. So
you're exactly right. And think about it, not only this owner's lifetime, generational.
Right.
We see owners where their businesses were started by great grandparents and grandparents. So it is the lifeblood of this family that goes back generations. So that's why envisioning and coming to peace with what the future looks like, I think, is the most critical part of the pro and con of what's achieved.
I couldn't agree more, because especially when it's multiple generations you referenced, that's a big responsibility to say, if my grandparents or my great grandparents started the company, and maybe that you don't have a generation that can or wants to carry it on, that in itself is a lot to work through, that this is the end of the road, if you will, for the family owning the business.
And maybe the way you get comfortable with that is achieving the highest return on investment,
yep,
because you're taking that generational dream, monetizing it, and handing it to the future generation to create their own dream.
Oh, I love that, Dawn. And I love that too, because it's all, I think, too, part of what all of us talk to our clients about is not only if you're ready to leave or move on, it is just as important, if not more important, to know, what are you moving towards, right?
Absolutely.
I love that you're saying, if the next generation, that this isn't going to be their focus, it's okay, then I'm going to raise as much money as I can so that they have the resources to be able to focus on their life's passions and endeavors. So with that, Matt, is there anything you wanted to add on to what Dawn shared? And if not, that's okay, because I know what we were also going to talk about. I think Dawn did a great job of summarizing that And certainly we all know she could go into much more detail, but we want to make sure we cover a few different topics today. And so to that end, Dawn talked a little bit about the different ways you can exit. So Matt, I think what I'd ask for you to share is, how does that look then once you've chosen the way that you're going to exit? How does that work in partnering with your banker to be able to get the money out of it?
I think going back to the three different possible ways to exit in a strategic, a financial, and a private sale to either, again, it could be your children, it could be siblings, it could be existing employees within your business. If you're selling to a strategic, a large, possibly publicly traded company, just a much larger entity, right, they're going to have their own financing in place. They're going to have their own access to capital. So sure, you really don't have to worry about that if selling to a much larger strategic. Okay. But if selling to a private equity firm or just to a group of people within your company, or for instance, if someone was selling their company and they were selling it to their three children who are in their business, right? That's still a sale of your business to those three people, and they may need to borrow money to make that happen. Focusing on a few different ways to do it, banks would typically look at lending to the company possibly as a cash flow based lending model or an asset based lending model. When looking at a cash flow-based lending model, the core focus is on the company's cash flow generation, and the industry term oftentimes uses EBITDA. So looking at the core EBITDA of the business over the last really 3 years, I've been focusing on the last 12 months, and oftentimes what the company will do or financial advisors may do if they've done maybe a quality of earnings beforehand to see what possible expenses were discretionary, if the owner was taking out possibly an above market salary because they could based upon their current financial position, they may add back certain things to the company's EBITDA to come up with a more stable market cash flow for the company. So then banks then look to lend to the company based upon that EBITDA in a cash flow lending situation. Banks may typically, I'm going to throw out a number of 3x leverage as an approximate percentage. So if the company has EBITDA of $5 million, conceptually a bank would look to lend $15 million. Depending on the industry, depending on your volatility and cyclicality, that number may be closer to 2x leverage, or in certain scenarios, in certain industries, that number could be closer to 4x leverage. And every bank would have a unique and different appetite for the amount of lending that they would be comfortable lending to that company. And again, it's so they could possibly borrow that much money. And then it's on the repayment side. Banks would typically, depending on the stability of the cash flow, depending on the company's business model, customer base, banks would typically like to get repaid in anywhere from 5 to 10 years, most likely, on that debt. There may be, it would most likely be in the one larger term loan to get repaid over 5 to 10 years. Banks could have things such as a cash flow recapture, which based upon certain metrics, they may like to get repaid sooner if the company is outperforming their benchmarks. Mm-hmm. But those are sort of different ways to finance something from a cash flow based lending model. On the flip side, banks oftentimes may look to lend based upon an asset based lending model. The company has a strong, depending on its given industry, may have a very strong balance sheet of accounts receivable, inventory, machinery and equipment, and even real estate, which may be held on or off the balance sheet. And banks may lend, for instance, approximately 75 to 80% against the receivables, 50 to 60% against the inventory, or 80 to 90% against appraised equipment to then help leverage those assets within the business to repay the loan. Sometimes you could try and have a small, what banks would call an air ball or an under-collateralized portion of the loan, but that would get paid back pretty quickly in a 1 to 3 year period if coupled with an asset-based loan.
What's an example or examples of when they would do the airball loan?
In the event there was an airball, if a bank wants to make sure that the company, after the sale of the business, has plenty of working capital and there isn't a lot of stress on the business. So in the event where companies may not have a lot of machinery and equipment or real estate for the bank to lend against, and it's all accounts receivable and or inventory, the bank, there may be a small component of the financing for the cash to close that the seller is looking to get or required to get the deal done that they may need. Again, in these types of situations, it's oftentimes when you're selling the business, it's person A selling to possibly their children, Right. Or possibly the general manager of the company,
right.
or
so, like, maybe the key people,
the key people of the company, right, that are remaining around. Again, as we talked, an ESOP conversation could make good sense too, and probably we could dedicate another future podcast to ESOPs solely. But an ESOP may not make sense because you would need to open that up to your entire employee base that would be eligible to be a partial ownership group versus selling to anywhere from 1 to 3 to 5 or 10 individuals. But uniquely, just as to follow up on selling to individuals, there's really a third tool that we at Wintrust have used over the last 10 years, which has been unique. And we call it sort of a partner loan program. And what we mean by that is, right, owners of businesses are partners. It's just another term. Oftentimes they might want to sell to, if I was selling my company and I wanted to sell to Dawn, but the company, we didn't want the debt on the company. Dawn wanted to buy in for 5% of the company, and that 5% of the company is worth $500,000. For instance, Dawn may not have $500,000, and we don't want the debt on the company. So Dawn will take that debt on personally to buy 5% of the business. Dawn may put down approximately 20% of her own money to put down $100,000 to buy in for my $100,000. But then the bank would give Dawn a loan personally for the remaining $400,000, and that would get paid back over a similar 5 to 10 years, depending on the overall structure of the business, stability of the cash flow, overall makeup of the business. And in that case, that loan is off the balance sheet. It's off the income statement. Those liabilities are held at the personal level. And a bank may take their assignment of their stock as their collateral and get paid back by the individual. It's a different way of selling specifically to one person off the balance sheet. Oftentimes you have many owners of the business, and so it may make sense. We oftentimes find this most common in accounting firms, law firms, maybe registered investment advisors, where you're bringing in junior associates to a partner level, and they're looking to pay back that loan based upon future income.
Hey, pardon the interruption. I know you are listening to Dollars and Cents, Creating Your Fulfilled Life with Nicole Romito, and we're happy you're here. If you have any questions, please head over to myprivatevista.com or the show notes to find out how to reach us. We'd love to hear from you.
I know, because otherwise you could really be upside down cash flow wise, or on either ineligible to get the loan on your own, or it's really not going to make financial sense for that new younger junior partner coming in. Do you take, with the partner loans, you said oftentimes you'll take assignment of the stock. Is it common to look for other collateral, you know, like a lien against their home, or if they have securities accounts that aren't retirement accounts?
Right. We would encourage them to leverage any assets that they have outside of the business. So in our particular loan, we would only be taking an assignment of that stock, which you could debate is the paper value of the company. Since we're taking an assignment of the stock, the company would be signing an agreement with us, either a corporate guarantee or a tri-party agreement, because the other owners of the business would not want the bank to be their owner in the event of a default, in the event of, again, unfortunately, possibly a retirement, in the event of death, in the event of termination, which unfortunately happens, the bank would have that agreement with the company as well to, again, sell back the shares in some agreed upon manner. But we would encourage them, going back to that example, Dawn buying in 5% for $500,000, if she had $100,000 of cash, again, we would be interested in financing $400,000, but she could tap into outside of our loan if she had an investment account, right, or if she had a home equity line of credit. She could tap into that for that additional $100,000 to $200,000 and put that down towards that 5%. So in my example, $100,000 of cash, maybe $100,000 from brokerage line, $100,000 from a home equity line of credit. In that case, she would only need to borrow from us $200,000.
Right. Okay. That's really neat. And especially too, I think as we see the service side of our economy continuing to grow, and I think a lot of the younger, the next gen are going to that part of the working world. So that's exciting. What else? I think as we've talked about the different ways to lend and sell, why don't whoever wants to start first, what are either some common, because I know each situation is individualized, but what have, in your guys' years of experience, have you seen things that have derailed a sale?
I think it starts at the very beginning, the inception point of what is my next step? What do I want to do? If it is someone who's thinking about there is no succession plan, what am I going to do after this is over? I think the struggle is they've been doing this for so long. What does the unknown look like? So there's a fear, potentially. Yeah. There's absolutely. There's nerves. There's things that sometimes difficult to confront. Putting it off, thinking about it later might mean missed opportunity for all the opportunities that are available. If you open yourself up to, I think it takes that question mark of the unknown. If you put that energy into the process of what is available to me and what can I do for myself, for the next part of my life, for the next generation, for my employees, whatever path you're taking, the effort, the energy you put into deciding and self-reflecting on what your individual goals are and what you want to accomplish makes the process so much smoother. I think additionally, it gets complicated with generational or employee transitions because it's asking difficult questions. Timelines, when do you want this to happen? What does it look like? How much? And when you're running a business and you're a team, those type of things don't come up. You don't go to the owner and ask right. them, hey, when are you planning on retiring and how much do you want to sell the business for? All of a sudden, you're forced into this uncomfortable arena of questions that haven't been asked, even though you've worked together for so many years, potentially, or even in the case of children and parents where they, you know, that it's just something they've never talked. Believe it or not, the bank can and has in the past be a very good sounding board. Sometimes the impartial partner that comes in to listen to both sides and what wants to accomplish and is able, we're not there to make any decisions. We're just there to be an ear that will listen, lend some advice about what we've seen, give you some thoughts. Sometimes yeah. I've seen that the tension and the uncomfortableness of these discussions is easier with someone in the room that has a neutral position and just wants to hear both sides. Because, you know, one of the pitfalls, that was one of your questions, both sides don't think they're being heard is one thing that has derailed a sale. Hurt feelings. The potential seller doesn't think that they're being heard about what they want to accomplish for their business. And the potential buyer thinks that they're not being heard because they don't want to wait 10 or 15 years until a decision's made. So that lack of communication and the ability to sit down and have that discussion is a lot of the ways. And then we get into sometimes the price just isn't right. and the owner is not going to sell for that price. There's market trends and those things that are very tangible. But when we get to the things that I see more often than not, hurt feelings erupt and they don't need to. If you bring in sometimes someone to hear both sides, it's just enough to smooth out the process.
Yeah. And I think too, having an outsider, and by that, they're not involved with the business or the family. Oftentimes that leads people to generally, I will say, put forward their best behavior. So hopefully the conversation maybe isn't getting as heated or emotional, but also too, I think with our experience, because at Private Vista, we work with a lot of closely held and family owned business owners and just helping them like think about, right? Like they don't know what they don't know. So questions to consider. I love what you mentioned about what information to share and when. Because I get not wanting to, you know, disincentivize your kids or maybe younger key employees to say, oh, this big sale's coming in 5-10 years. So I'll just kind of ride it out till I get that. But also so they can have enough information to understand what's coming and kind of have them be part of the solution, right?
Right. I think that there has been quite a change in terms of the generation gap. The younger generation is very capable, very competent, just like in the past, but wants to be part of things, wants transparency, wants to know what the future looks like. Right. And I think some
which is understandable.
And some of the older generations, if you think about it, that wasn't available to them.
Right.
That wasn't, it was just not an option for them. Right. So there's somewhat of a generational gap at times. And that's why having someone that's just listening can be very productive. Again, and to your point, it's the other things that come involved with that too, because when you have a neutral party, it's also looking out for you in so many capacities. It's not just the transaction of the sale or what the eventual structure of that sale is. It's your estate. It's your tax preparation. It's your legal preparation. It's so extensive. And so inviting a third party neutral person is just one more advocate for you in the room as you're contemplating this big life change.
Yeah, absolutely. And so along those lines, summarize here, we've talked about, are you selling all or partial? What are the different, what are the options for who you're selling to? Matt talked a little bit about the type of sale, cash flow based, asset based, the partner loan program. Matt, why don't you kind of wrap us up here? I know we have a lot more all three of us could talk about, but I think we thought it'd be a great way to end talking about, okay, you've decided that you've got your sale, who's buying, how it's going to be structured. What are some of the components that people should be aware of that are going to be part of the sales transaction?
Probably in everyone's perfect world, you're going to sell your business and you're going to get one of those big lottery size checks with with all the money, and you're just going to get all
like
the value.
That isn't always the outcome.
That's probably not always the outcome. And many of the people that are listening, that are thinking about selling their business, probably once bought into maybe that same business, right? And maybe they started it from scratch. But if you've ever bought a business, you'd probably like it, and you may not have your arms fully around the existing business that you're going to buy. You'd like that key seller or two or three key sellers to maybe stick around for a little bit. So you may ask them to maybe to have a certain part of their debt that would be in the payment of a seller note. So if you're selling your business for $10 million, the buyer may ask for you to take maybe 10% of that or 20% of that and take that as a note that they may pay you back over 1, 3, 5, 10 years or something like that in the form of a seller note. Also, they may ask you to have an earnout. So going back to focusing on some of the cash flow generation of the business, if you have a company that generates $2 million of EBITDA, the buyer of the business wants to make sure that EBITDA is stable and the profits are there long term. They may ask you to take a certain percentage of whatever you're selling the business for and take that in the form of an earnout tied to the company's performance in future years, typically 1 to 3 years of the performance. Beyond that, I don't think the buyers, they probably have their people in place and their culture in place, and they wouldn't have it go in much longer. If you're selling to a financial private equity group, potentially, they may have you actually take a percentage of your equity and the percentage of the sale price and have it be in the form of a rollover equity. So you may end up taking 10 or 20% and rolling that into their fund or into their remaining ownership group. So then you still have skin in the game and you'd be working in. Many times they'd ask you to sign an employment agreement for anywhere from 1 to 5 years to help that. Yeah. But the nice side there is they're motivated financial investors. They want a return on their investment. And then hopefully in 1 to 5 years or 10 years when they flip that investment again, because these private equity funds oftentimes have durations and timelines that they need to stick right to, that when they flip the company, you would then take part in that stock appreciation. And over the last 10 years, we've seen a lot of good success stories where clients have sold their business, taken a portion of that, rolled it into it, and the rollover equity can appreciate, hopefully, they typically say 2, 3, 4 times on top of that.
That sounds like the best of both worlds, right?
The best of both worlds.
Liquidity today, and then you still have part of it. You still have some skin in the game, so you're participating in that growth of tomorrow.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so, I mean, those are some of the key components in terms of the cash at close and where all the money's coming from for the value. There's probably some working capital adjustments and escrow accounts tied to the closing. Typically, there may be anywhere from 1 to 2 different types of closing escrows to tie out a certain amount of working capital adjustments and some items at closing. Those typically will go from 3 to 6 months to maybe 12 to 18 months, depending on the complexity of the business and the complexity of the model. So oftentimes you can work with your current bank or a trust company to set up those closing, those escrow accounts to help handle those funds. But typically within 18 to 24 months, all of those funds would be paid out to the recipients as well.
Well, Nicole, on that comment that you were saying, isn't it great to continue to have that liquidity that is something that we're seeing that is changing some of these decisions around the sales of the business mm-hmm. and whether they take paper back or want to roll in and stay in is, you know, when the concept of saving for retirement and having liquid retirement and 401ks and right. that whole concept, it was predicated on at a point in time of what costs would be. We really are seeing this new generation of owners that are selling who are contemplating the finance of their retirement related to their healthcare costs, related to yes. their salary. So they don't want to work as much as they've been working their whole life, but we're seeing a really interesting generational approach to wanting some level of continuing involvement in some business so that it helps offset some of the inflation concerns that maybe the market isn't providing in the 401ks.
Interesting. Yeah. And that could, I could see that cutting both ways from the buyer's perspective, right? Because I know, as Matt outlined, it is pretty common that you have some type of either ongoing employment and or earn out, but you get the institutional knowledge of the history of the company.
Absolutely.
Right. And then also help if the buyer is interested in preserving the culture, that's going to be a big driver of that as well. So it is interesting, the different trends that we're seeing. With that, I could sit here and talk with you two for many, many more hours, but our time is coming to an end. Was there anything, like really quick, one or two lines that either of you wanted to make sure either to highlight or add on?
I think you've done a tremendous job covering this at a high level. So I just want to thank you.
Oh, no, thank you. I appreciate both of you sharing what I know is a small slice of your wisdom and knowledge, and certainly your time, which is all of our most precious commodities. So thanks for joining me today. I think, as you know, I ask each of my guests a question before we wrap up. So Matt, we're going to start with you. If you could live anywhere in the world and there's no constraints, no financial, no time, no, we have to be here because of the kids' travel soccer. Where would you want to live and why?
We've been fortunate enough to travel a lot of places, my wife and I, and our favorite location that we've gone to is St. Lucia.
Oh, and I love St. Lucia.
We had an amazing experience there, and we keep talking about going back, but it was, and we've never been to Hawaii or we've never been to some of the different islands, but it was perfection for 7 days in a row. And so if I had to go anywhere, I'd go back to St. Lucia.
Perfect. Thanks for sharing. And Dawn, how about you?
So I'm taking a little different approach of, since I have endless amounts of resources, the way that you've said this, and no restrictions. I don't know if this would be a permanent thing, but I would spend some time on the International Space Station.
Oh, that's interesting.
So to me, and it kind of really ties back to, I think what, and I don't want to speak for Matt, but why we got into banking is the ability to work with these owners that have these visions and these dreams and these entrepreneurial natures. It's fun and it has never stopped being fun. So to me, it's that, right? To go into a new territory and to see how someone else is doing something. It's kind of the same spirit of just the unknown and living vicariously through people that, you know, are doing something that is something I won't have access to or would never know how to approach. So that's again, great. Mine's more fantasy, but I think
that's
it
the
would
whole
be,
point of the question. So there's no wrong answer. So thanks for sharing. Matt and Dawn, I do want to say thank you so much for joining me today. If any of our listeners would like to get in contact with you guys, what's the best way to do so?
I think email would be best, or email or phone number. My email address is mhammer@wintrust.com. That's WINTRUST.com.
And Dawn, how about for you?
Email, it's dmase, M-A-S-E, at wintrust.com.
Perfect. Thank you.
That was a great conversation, number one. But number two, I love the way you end these podcasts asking people where they would live, because I end up walking away with a different place I want to live at the end of every episode.
No,
but Dawn gets the ribbon right now. I mean, it's 100%. Like, that's a great idea. I love that idea actually a lot.
Yeah, I think it would be more of a vacation. I mean, to live there, I don't think I would be that adventurous. But boy, if someone came in right now and was like, "You have no resources, you have no restrictions, you have unlimited resources," I would be like, "Buy me a month. Let me see what they do. Let me see what Earth looks like from out there.
Yeah.
Let me see what they're talking about with these black holes. Let me see this stuff."
Yeah.
Just because it's the one place we've only ever read about. Yes. But no one's ever, you know, just a very few handful have seen. So I think it would be awesome to take like what we think it is to what it really is.
I like that idea. I find it enormously appealing. It's fantastic. I really do. Nicole,
probably not in my lifetime, unfortunately.
Don't say that.
Don't limit yourself.
Okay, fair.
The question was, if you had unlimited resources, I think you went to the right place, okay?
Yeah.
I think you went right to the right place, to tell you the truth. So, Nicole, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they reach out to you and get in contact with you?
There's two ways they can call. They can call at 312-831-4370. That goes to our receptionist and she'll be able to get a hold of me. Or they can go to our website at myprivatevista.com. And on our homepage, there's a contact us button. And if you just fill in your information, please reference this episode. And then myself or one of my wonderful colleagues will be sure to follow up.
Great. You can reference it, the space station episode. Thanks so much, Nicole, as always. For those of you who have taken the time to listen, we appreciate it. We hope you like it. In fact, if you do like it, would you please share this with other people? Spread the word about the podcast. And this part's easy. If you are not a subscriber already, hit the subscribe button. That way you will not miss another episode of this podcast. And you will have the complete series on looking at and contemplating and how to sell your business, among many other episodes, as a matter of fact. On behalf of Nicole and everybody at My Private Vista, I am Bill Tucker, and I am urging you to go out today and make today a great day or not. It's your choice. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Dollars and Cents, Creating Your Fulfilled Life with Nicole Romito, sponsored by Private Vista. Visit our website at www.myprivatevista.com or give us a call at 312-831-4370. And don't forget to click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. Private Vista is a group comprised of investment professionals registered with Hightower Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors LLC. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities. No investment process is free of risk, and there is no guarantee that the investment process or the investment opportunities referenced herein will be profitable. Past performance is neither indicative nor a guarantee of future results. The investment opportunities referenced herein may not be suitable for all investors. All data or other information referenced herein is from sources believed to be reliable. Any opinions, news, research, analyses, prices, or other data or information contained in this presentation is provided as general market commentary and does not constitute investment advice. Private Vista and Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates make no representations or warranties expressed or implied as to the accuracy or completeness of the information or for statements or errors or omissions or results obtained from the use of this information. Private Vista and Hightower Advisors, LLC assume no liability for action made or taken in reliance on or relating in any way to this information. The information is provided as of the date referenced. Such data and other information are subject to changes without notice. This was created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed herein are solely those of the authors and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors, LLC or any of its affiliates.